You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome in again, everybody. Another wild week in the American League West. This is MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition, where the Astros continue to turn heads, but the Rangers, the A's, the Angels, even the Mariners, showing life in this division, getting much more interesting by the day. It's a week of optimism in the American League West. Those reports coming right now. Talking a little baseball, talking a lot of Astros. B-Tags, look, the Astros now, we're past Memorial Day. If there are those fans who have been waffling, maybe kind of on the fence, not sure if they really want to jump in, is it time to finally believe?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're almost to the one-third point of the season, and, you know, here they are sitting with a pretty comfortable lead in the division. So, I think even with all their flaws and everything, I think they're going to be competitive, I think, at least for the next couple of months. I can't imagine, you know, just barring a total collapse, that they go deep into the summer and are in some kind of playoff contention at this point, just because, you know, the division really is scuffling as a whole, and, you know, the Astros have taken advantage of that with their quick start. But, you know, you also got to remember that, you know, they're probably going to be adding some players as we go along here, whether that's Carlos Correa or Jed Lowrie when he gets back, or even via trade. You know, I think they have a chance to get better as the summer progresses. So that should give fans even more reason for optimism.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Lowrie, because I guess it was just today or yesterday, I was thinking to myself, when he went down, I thought that could be their first real challenge. And he's a good ball player. He does a lot of things for him. They have not skipped a beat at all without Jed Lowrie. You mentioned Kevin Correa as a potential as well, and we'll get into Jeff Luno's visit to Fresno. But, that might be the biggest story yet, is that they have managed to navigate this stretch without Jed Lowrie as well as they have.
Yeah, you know, and when Lowrie first went down with the thumb injury, they had about a week, 10-game stretch there where they really scuffled and they missed him. And, then, you know, they still miss him, and they could use his, you know, his professional at bats and his ability to get on base, because they don't have a lot of those guys right now, especially with Altuve slumping a little bit here in recent days. But, you know, the way this lineup is built, that even though you don't have a lot of high batting average, high on base guys, everyone's got the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark. So, It's a formula they've lived and died with all year, and when they're hitting the home runs, they're tough. But, you know, when Lowrie comes back and they can plug him in the lineup and a guy who can hit a few home runs as well, switch hitter, draws walks, gets on base, you know, he has a dynamic that I think they do miss, but they're managing to win without him.
Yeah, in typical Astros fashion, I think everyone can agree they are the story of Major League Baseball this year. And so every week, everything they do is news. But it would be fitting this week that a young man by the name of Preston Tucker puts his name in the all-time record books. And the Astros turn a triple play. It's just another ho-hum week. It's like, I'm not sure what's left to check off the list of remarkable occurrences for this game.
Yeah, you know, I keep a list of moments as the season goes along, just so I can refer back to them. And I think at the end of the year, we run our top moments of the year. And I've already gone past 10. I'm like, oh, that's a moment. There's just, you're right. Every week there's something else that just makes you go, wow, I've never seen that. Or that's pretty amazing. And Preston Tucker is on that list a couple of times. And, you know, two pinch hit home runs late in games. You know, one of them, they both tied games and they ended up losing one. But the one on Sunday in Detroit was just very impressive. I mean, he went down to a knee and hit a home run to tie the game late. I mean, just a game that I thought they had lost. I was like, you know, there's no way the kid can come through again, and he did. And he was in the lineup first game in Baltimore, and he came through with a hit. So, I think he's here to stay, and that's kind of an example of what we're talking about earlier. I don't think anybody at the beginning of the year thought Preston Tucker would be contributing to this team like he is. And here he is in the outfield mix right now. Like we said earlier, things are going to change. They're going to add players as we go along, and maybe there'll be another Preston Tucker come up.
You mentioned earlier in this podcast that, you know, even with some of their flaws, they played well. They're 12 games over 500, as you and I speak right now. What are some of the flaws? What would be a concern of yours?
Well, I think the biggest concern they have to have is starting pitching, just the depth of starting pitching. And I think that's going to be one of the biggest things we look forward to in the at the trade deadline. I think they have to be on the lookout to not so much get an ace, but just get another proven guy to put in that rotation that you can count on down the stretch. You know, McCullers has done a nice job. Overholt is coming back. You know, Roberto Hernandez didn't pitch well the other day. So you really have two spots in the rotation that are kind of up for grabs. And Scott Feldman, don't know what you're going to get with him either. He really struggled in the first inning. So they have to upgrade their pitching. You know, I think their lineup could use another consistent bat. You know, if they're on days they're not hitting the home runs, and they just need another guy in that lineup who could stretch the lineup a little bit, maybe get it to one of the thumpers, and they don't have that. So I think the bullpen's fine, but if I were Jeff Luna, I'd be looking at starting pitching, and maybe if you can get another bat in the process as well, that would be even better.
Well, Jose Altuve took a seat the other day, just a mental day, I guess, as manager wanted to put it. No concerns there, right? I mean, this guy is certainly proven enough at this point that just a minor, you know, setback, I guess, of a week or so of just tough at bats for him, or does he really, you know, the rest all he really needs at this point? What do you see?
You know, yeah, he got the day of rest. He came out the first series in Baltimore and, you know, came out swinging and had a couple of hits right off the bat, which, you know, you certainly figured he would have. But, you know, I think Altuve's kind of figuring out that the teams are pitching him a little differently now. And, you know, he needs to not swing it stuff off the plate a little bit. I think pitchers, obviously, they have a very aware of what he can do and his bat control and how good he is at putting the bat on the baseball. And I think the pitchers recently have done a nice job really just changing what they do than they did last year to try to get him out when it seemed like nobody could get him out. But I think Altuve is a good enough hitter. He has good enough bat control that I think he'll adjust. And he's going to have to keep adjusting. But we never really saw him have a slump like this for, you know, 7-8 games like he has now. We didn't see that last year. So it's kind of shocking. And you look at his batting average, he's hitting 300. He's like, oh, no. But, you know, Jose Altuve at the end of the year is hitting 300. You know, he's going to have a very productive year.
Right. Yeah, no question about that. You mentioned Kevin Correa earlier. I know Jeff Luno was visiting various prospects. He was checking in with the Fresno club. Any better insight as to, you know, when we might see Correa at the big league level? Is it imminent? What do you guess?
Yeah, I would say that, yeah, Carlos Correa, I think definitely we'll see him this year. I still think before the All-Star break, it's going to depend on how he performs. He's gone down Triple-A and done pretty well. You know, he's not putting up the monster numbers like he did at Double-A. And, you know, he's facing some pitchers now who have played in the major league, playing with some major leaguers. So it's obviously a big uptick in competition for him. But I think he's good enough that he can handle it. And, you know, like I said, I mean, I think they're going to need Carlos Correa. I mean, if he's hitting 320 and hitting some home runs, they're going to need him to come in and play. And I think if Carlos Correa came up today, that I think he could hit 270 and hit some home runs, and I think he would play a tremendous shortstop. But, you know, right now they're winning, and that's one of the other things they have to consider. You know, they're going to have to add players at some point, but right now they're winning with what they have. Let Correa keep playing at Triple-A. You know, you have the Super 2 thing as well they have to consider. Jonathan Singleton tearing the cover off the ball. But it's hard now with Carter and Gattis, both of them, all of a sudden two of your leaders in RBIs. Where do you play Singleton if you bring him up? So, you know, I think they're going to stand pat right now with both those guys. But I think we'll see both of them this summer for sure.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question about Singleton. And they've seen Singleton before. It's not like, you know, there's a big mystery there. This is a young man who really has to prove a whole lot more. But at the same time, he doesn't seem to be running into too many challenges at Triple-A. And I'm sure he's hungry to get back. So that could be a tough little balance to keep for Jeff Luna.
Yeah, I mean, Singleton has nothing to prove. And it's not like the Astros need to see more of him at Triple-A. But it's just a roster crunch at this point. He's going to be DH. He's going to be first base. Yeah. Two guys at those positions, they're paying a lot of money.
And lo and behold, Evan Gattis, all of a sudden, for all his struggles and his 0 for whatever to start the season, he leads the club in RBI. You know, he's tough to watch sometimes, but you take him out of the lineup, you know, that's 30 RBIs that you're going to have to replace. And Chris Carter, they keep waiting for him to come around and waiting. I think at some point they're probably not going to wait forever, and maybe when they do that, then maybe they make the move with Singleton. But there's no guarantee Singleton comes up here and gives you more production than Carter. And based on what we saw last year, when Singleton came up here and really struggled and struck out a ton, especially towards the end of the season, but there's no guarantee he's going to come up here and put up the same kind of numbers. Inside, he won't, but you know, they need to find a middle ground somewhere that he can come here and get some productive at-bats and be a productive part of the lineup. But I think until they decide they've seen enough of Chris Carter to where they want to go a different direction, there's really no spot for Singleton right now. And that's just a roster crunch right now. And I'm sure when Luno was in Fresno a few days ago, he probably had that conversation with John.
Yeah, well, interesting point. And certainly, while he would strike out a lot, hard to imagine striking out more than Chris Carter has been. 63 strikeouts and 151 at-bats. So, anyway, good stuff as always, Brian. Stay dry. I know there's been plenty of rain there in Houston, and we'll do it again next week, maybe from a kayak.
All right, Dave. Sounds good.
Walden, it's funny. The Angels have played a little bit better recently, backed up over 500. They still haven't been able to get well past that threshold, but I have them winning, what, 9 out of the last 14 games. Just generally playing a little bit better baseball. Do you think you're seeing some indications that they might be, you know, riding the ship, getting over that hump, that long line?
You know, Dave, it's I feel like they aren't really any different than they were before. And as you touched on, they're winning more games, and I think they got to feel good about that. They're still waiting for the offense to come around for them. And I know we've spent a lot of time talking about their offense on this podcast. But, I mean, you look at today, I mean, we're through 7 weeks of the season. They won in walk-off fashion on Memorial Day. They're still 30th in the major leagues in OPS. They've scored the second fewest runs per game in baseball. And you could look at that two ways. I mean, you could look at that half glass full or half empty. Their offense has been bad, but they still found a way to be over 500 right now. They're still treading water. And you got to think that their offense is going to turn it around. This is clearly not the offense from last year, the dynamic offense from last year that led the majors in runs. But I don't think they're the worst offense in baseball either. There are a lot of guys in that lineup that still are not really hitting to their capabilities. It starts with Albert Pujols, and then it goes on to Matt Joyce and Chris Iannetta, who was both of those guys showed some good signs recently. To C.J. Cron, who was just optioned back to the minor leagues on Monday. I mean, up and down, that entire lineup. So, you know, and we talked to Albert Pujols about that after Sunday's game when the road trip wrapped up. He said, we like where we're at. We'll take it because we're not even playing that good right now. I think there's a sense in that clubhouse that they're pretty satisfied with being one game over 500, knowing that their offense has underperformed the way it has. They feel like that offense has a really good run left in it. And when it does get hot, when guys start clicking, I think they get the sense that maybe they could take off a little bit. And, you know, at the very least, they're treading water right now.
Well, you pointed it out before, too, though. They got up to a bit of a slow start last year, right, before ultimately hitting stride and then running off the best record in baseball.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're – last time I checked, I think after Sunday – they were just two games off last year's pace, and then they really took off. But, you know, one red flag, though, is, you know, even last year when they were kind of hovering around 500 and treading water a lot like they are right now, you know, their run differential was still off the charts. They were, I think by this point last year, they were at plus 40 run differential or something close to that. I think right now they're still like -2 or -3 in run differential. You know, run differential is usually a pretty good indication of just the talent level on a team. But having said that, I mean, the Angels' run differential is pretty low right now simply because they're not scoring enough runs. So they feel like they have that left in them. But, you know, yeah, and like you said, I mean, they're right there with everybody else with an offense that's not getting going right now. You know, they're used to slow starts. they've gotten off to slow starts each of the last 3 or 4 years. Last year was a little bit better. But they're never really clicking on full cylinders right out of the gate.
Yeah, and then, you know, then you see things like we saw, I guess it was Monday night, right, where, you know, you see an intentional walk issued to Mike Trout only to see Albert Pujols follow and hit the game winner. And what's interesting to me about that, so many things, but just the notion, and I mean, we could fast forward 5 years from now. He's still Albert Pujols, and he still does have a sense for that moment. I know there's no such thing as clutch, right? We can't seem to quantify that, and you know, statisticians will tell you it doesn't exist. But boy, I tell you, having watched Pujols for as long as I have a hard time buying that notion because he does have, you know, he just has something when it comes to those moments, and he proved it again.
Yeah, there are some players. I know you can't quantify clutch, and I know a lot of people scoff at it. But, I mean, we have to realize at the end of the day that this is a game that's played by human beings. And there are some players that are able to slow things down during those moments. And then there are other players who speed things up in those moments and get a little too over-anxious and kind of aren't themselves anymore in those clutch situations. And Albert Pujols is not that guy because Albert Pujols has been in that situation many, many, many times before in his life. And I think the most important thing, Albert's not afraid to fail in those situations. And when you're not afraid to fail, you know, you kind of relax a little bit more. You're able to slow things down. You know, he's not going to come through in the clutch every time, but I think he's better at handling that situation than other players who just get a little too over-anxious. These are human beings that are playing this game. And, you know, you're right on about just the notion of intentionally walking someone to get to Albert. It's a smart thing to do. Albert said it after Monday's game. He said, it's not rocket science. If I were the manager, I would have done the same thing. Not just for the fact that by walking Trout, you get an out at every base, but by walking Trout, you know, you're not letting the best player on the team beat you. And as extensive a resume as Albert Pujols has, Mike Trout is the best player on that team. And, you know, but I think on the other side of that, Albert is about as prideful a ball player as I've ever seen. He still looks at that as a diss, even though he won't admit it publicly. And I think if you go back and watch that tape from last night when he got that broken bat single through the left side against Craig Kimbrell, as he was jogging down the first baseline, he shot a little glare into the Padres dugout. And, you know, that's just the defiance kind of coming out of Albert. You know, I think when he takes a step back, he understands why they would intentionally walk Mike Trout. But I think at the moment, his mindset is, how dare you walk somebody to pitch to me? You know, and you got to love that. I think the Angels have the luxury of, you know, having a veteran guy who's been there so many times bat behind Mike Trout. And, you know, it was a huge storyline when Mike Socha moved Trout out of the leadoff spot into the number two spot early in the 2013 season. A big reason for that is if Mike Trout were intentionally walked, Albert Pujols would be the one batting behind him. And ever since then, they've intentionally walked Mike Trout 14 times to get to Albert Pujols. That's pretty remarkable.
Wow. Yeah, that is remarkable. You know, I always think of him as, you almost think of him as an automatron, a machine, just because he has been so consistent, so thoroughly good, and you know, so few highs and lows, per se. And yet that your story illustrates that side of him that is so easily overlooked, you know, glancing in there at Bud Black and the Padres as he's heading down to first. Because that competitor in him is so much bigger, I think, than people realize.
Yeah, nobody wants to win more than him, really. Nobody.
Yeah, yeah, he's a scary guy. Jared Weaver continues his resurgence. I tell you what, man, you've doctored him up right. Ever since you started working on him and the differential changeup and you know, getting with Jamie Moyer, he's been lights out. I mean, this is and that's another reason I feel like they have been able to sustain a little bit better play, you know, week by week.
Yeah, you know, while Jared Weaver was going through those struggles in the beginning of the year, 0-4 ERA of 6.29 through his first six starts, there was a sense in that clubhouse that he's better than this, that he's going to turn it around. I don't think there is anybody in that clubhouse or in the coach's box, from Mike Socha to the front office to any of his teammates that expected a turnaround this drastic. I mean, Jared Weaver has gone from kind of the depths of his struggles, struggling more than he ever has in his career, to just putting together this four-start stretch that has just been remarkable, from a shutout against the Astros at home to I think it was like three or four runs and 14 combined innings in Toronto and Baltimore, which are two very hitter-friendly parks, to Monday night, he was one out away from pitching seven scoreless innings against the Padres, who, I mean, they're having their struggles, but that's a pretty dangerous lineup. It was a very interesting scene yesterday because it was Angels were leading 3-0. There was a man on top of the seventh, and Jared Weaver was at 104 pitches with two outs. And Mike Socha came out. Usually when Mike Socha comes out, he takes the ball from you, and that's it. Socha came out and chatted with Weaver because he wanted him to understand that why he was taking him out, even though he looked so good. He wanted to bring in the lefty Jose Alvarez because the Padres were trying out kind of three straight lefties. One of them was a switch hitter who struggles against lefties. And, you know, the camera kept going right back to Weaver as Jose Alvarez kept up, continued to give up hits, and the Padres tied the game. You know, and it kind of diminished from what was just another remarkable start by Weaver. You know, the fastball, we talked about it. The fastball is what it is. It's not going to get much harder. It was pretty much 84, 85, 86 on Monday. But he's locating better. I think the ball's coming out of his hand better. And the velocity's playing up again like it used to. The one thing that he keeps talking about is that he found a delivery that kind of works for him, which is keeping his head on the target, throwing through the target, which kind of means that you're driving towards home plate instead of just kind of tailing off with your left shoulder. He's able to get more on his pitches right now. And he looks like the Jared Weaver from August, September last year, which is when Jared Weaver kind of found a little bit more in his fastball. Pitches looked more crisp coming out of his hand. And, you know, that is such a welcoming sight for the Angels right now. You know, Garrett Richards may have already evolved into their ace, but they need Jared Weaver to give him a chance to win games. And, you know, I don't think anybody on that Angels team expected him to do it like this, but you got to tip your cap to him. I mean, he's we talked about Albert Pujols being one of the ultimate competitors. I think Jared Weaver's right there with him.
Yeah, it has been very interesting to watch, and it's been fun to see these Angels slowly but surely seeming to turn this ship around. Alden, always a good time to talk a little baseball with you. Look forward to it again next week.
All right, thanks, man. Take care.
It's always fun to talk a little baseball, and with the Mariners lately, it's more fun because they've been playing better, and it's over now, maybe a two-plus week stretch where, you know, you win 6 out of 10, you win, you know, 5 out of 7. I feel like maybe they're starting at long last now to get their legs underneath. You see it the same way?
It seems to. It's interesting when you start out slow, it just seems like a tough climb back sometimes. And I think people are kind of frustrated when they lose. They feel like, oh, they're not making up ground. But you look kind of step back at the big picture, and you know they've got a winning record. You know, over the last 15, 20 games, doing fairly well. A winning road trip at this point. You know, they're picking up. You got to win series. You got to just keep kind of grinding away. You're not gonna win them all. You know, it would be nice to get on a 5-6 game win streak. You'd probably, you know, leapfrog some things to get them going. But you know, they've kind of been doing the, you know, win 2 out of 3 and kind of getting back up toward 500 and making that climb. And they are playing better baseball. There's no doubt. Their pitching has been certainly better, and the hitting. It's spotty here and there, but they seem to get some pieces coming around, and you know, that's really where they are. They feel like they're a better team than they've played to this point, and they're kind of getting back to where they think they should be, and they just got to keep making up ground as they go here.
Well, you know, you mentioned some guys maybe starting to show some signs, and this is, you know, this is one of those things, but when a guy really struggles, and let's face it, Cano has not been real good this early part of the season. Hey, he has a 2 RBI day and contributes a couple of hits, and I get it, man. Believe me, I get it. We're looking, hey, he's coming around. We're seeing signs. But are you seeing some things with Robinson Cano that at least make you feel a little better about, you know, things coming around for him?
Well, as we stand today, I mean, it is a pretty brief turnaround. He really has struggled for an unusually long time for Robinson Cano. You know, a good 3-4 weeks where he just not hitting the ball like Robinson Cano, and that's just not something you expect. And last night here has a couple RBIs, a couple sharp singles, and certainly that's what they're looking for from Cano. And certainly he looked like a weight off his shoulders last night. Of any guy that plays the game easy and doesn't seem to press, it's Cano. But he is human, and that's one of the things he said to me when I talked to him 2 days ago. He says, I know I am human. And sometimes we forget, you know, and even a Robinson Cano starts to feel it a little bit. A couple hits, can't get that weight off his shoulder. He's a guy who knows his swing as well as anybody in the game, and it's really hard to believe that he won't get things back headed up toward Cano levels. But hitting 250 for the first 2 months of the season, not something you expect from Cano, and not really driving the ball in the last few weeks like you would expect. So, you know, that's a place they got to get better. There's no doubt. Hitting in front of Nelson Cruz, they got to get guys on base. They can't be just hitting solo home runs, expecting to get a lot of mileage out of them. So Cano, a big guy, they need him to drive in runs from that three hole. They need him to get on base for Cruz and kind of ignite that. What they came into this season thinking the key was that 3-4-5 of Cano, Cruz, and Kyle Seager. And they got Seager coming around, 11-game hitting streak now, starting to hit the ball pretty well. Cruz obviously been playing well, lights out all year. And if you can get Cano up there, that's really what they've kind of tried to build this roster around. So we'll see. I mean, I suspect Cano will be fine over the long haul, but they need him to keep going the direction that he started here in the last day.
Yeah. You know, we joked a couple weeks ago about the fact that we rarely talked about him this year, partly because Cruz has been such a big story and partly because Cano has done, you know, very little up until recently. But I'm intrigued by that line that he knows he's human. Was he reminding you, hey, Greg, you know I'm human, right? I mean, I'm going to have my good times or bad times. Or was it sort of an epiphany, like, holy mackerel, I'm human. I can struggle too. So which way was he going on that?
I think more of the latter. I think you know, sometimes, you know, when you're at that level, you almost forget that you can struggle and things. I'm not saying things come easily for him because Robinson Cano is a guy who works. You know, he's a guy that stays in shape over the off season, works extremely hard at baseball back home in the Dominican, and certainly works with the Mariners. And one of the reasons they love him that he's not only a star but a guy who sets a great tone and in the way he works and the way he handles himself. So, I mean, sometimes you know, I guess we all run into it. You know, the life is humbling, baseball is humbling, It isn't always perfect, and you know, when Robinson Cano looks up and sees he's hitting 250, it does mean. I mean, it stings him a little bit. There's no doubt he's a man with a lot of pride, and you know, he said, "Hey, I need a couple good months to get back to where I want to be, and I believe that's where I'm going to be." So, you know, you watch Robinson Cano play over the years, you know what he can do, and you know, I don't think there's a lot of doubt. As Lloyd McClendon will say and continue to say, look at the book. You know, look what he's done over his career, and you know, that's the player he is. That's the player they expect him to be. You know, he's still young and in his prime. There's no reason for him to be declining. But every baseball player has stretches, and Cano has had one over his first month and a half of this season. That just not quite what we expect from him. But again, not horrible. I mean, he's hitting 250. He's got 12 doubles. Just not the big numbers you expect from a Cano.
No, but if you do see that come around, and Austin Jackson's coming back, the Brad Miller story continues to be a great story as the super sub, you know, the guy who can do it all. You know, that, to me, that adds quite an element now to this ball club. You know, if you can start, you got a guy like that, you can get production count, him to produce, and just about anywhere you put him on the field, you get Cano going, the way Cruz has been swinging. You can see it coming together. I got to know, though, what's this, you know, we talked about the boomstick a couple weeks ago, and I saw the bloomstick recently. Now, did you make that up, or did the guys come up with that in the clubhouse?
You know, I'm embarrassed to say I did make that up. I don't know that I originated, but it seemed pretty obvious when Willie Blomquist came in, not only stepped in and hit well, he was filling in the right field for Nelson Cruz, and had a big hit, big double, just missed a home run. And Willie doesn't hit a lot of home runs. And hit one about a foot off the top of the fence, a game-winning hit for them. Makes a throw from right field, throws a guy out, and you got Bloomstick filling in for Bloomstick. You know, just once in a while, you know, you roll with something. But Willie's a great guy, and certainly loved making a contribution to a big win for him.
Hey, sometimes these things just write themselves, right?
Yeah.
Well, we won't say that, but you know,
Yeah.
James Paxton has really been big. It's funny, you know, because Paxton's been a good story, but so is Elias. How do we say his last name?
Elias.
Yeah,
learned to say him because he's been darn good. We talked early this season that Jay Happ was kind of holding the rotation together, and since then Paxton and Elias have jumped on board, and Elias stepping in for Hisashi Iwakuma, and those are big shoes to fill. Iwakuma got off to a rough start, and people kind of forget, but this is one of the most underrated pitchers in the American League the last couple of years, and a huge part of this rotation, and he's probably out till the All-Star break or around there at this point. Hasn't even really started throwing yet again, coming back from a strained lat muscle. So Elias has stepped in and been lights out as a lefty there, and he was good last year as a rookie, but didn't even make the rotation out of spring with the depth they had. But they said at the time, we need more than five guys, and sure enough, before long Elias is back up here. 16 straight starts dating back to last July of three runs or less. That kind of consistency is pretty darn good. And Paxton as well has come around, and he's been outstanding. Really the Paxton they expected. So yeah, the rotation definitely, with King Felix at the top there is definitely on the upswing. And over the last, I think it's 34 games, they have the best starting rotation ERA in baseball. So that's kind of what we expected, and that's a big reason that this team seems to be headed in the right direction.
Yeah, and you can only imagine if Taijuan Walker can figure things out, just how good things can get. And I know, he's 22 years old, but there's going to come a point where he's going to have to figure it out, or maybe they're going to have to find somebody else to do the job for him for a while. I don't want to put words in your mouth on that, Greg, and we're running out of time anyway. But that's my little observation for the day. Greg, awesome stuff as always. Have a great week. Safe travels, and we'll do it again about a week from now.
Sounds good, Dave.
Suddenly, it showed life. They've won six in a row. I've got them, I think, at 14 wins in the last 21 games. What has happened to the Texas Rangers?
Well, Dave, I think their pitching has been a little better, starting pitching especially. Nick Martinez, Gallardo, Kobe Lewis have pitched well. Wandy Rodriguez has been terrific. Their bullpen has been much better lately. Neftali Feliz is on the disabled list, and Sean Tolleson has taken over as the closer. Ross Ohlendorf has taken on a more prominent role in the bullpen. The left-handers Alex Claudio and Sam Freeman are pitching better. Offensive has been great lately. Prince Fielder has been hitting well all year, but you're starting to see Shin-Soo Chu pick it up. Delino DeShields has been terrific. Mitch Moreland has been good since he came back from the disabled list. They're just hitting the ball the way they expect to do, even a little bit better. So you throw all those in there, and they've been a little more consistent, and they're just playing better baseball.
Yeah, how much of some of the lineup tinkering in recent weeks, especially with regard to Leonis Martin, how much of a difference do you think any of that has made?
Well, I think the big guy has been Delino DeShields. I mean, he's been terrific. Speed, hitting the ball, bunting, doing all the right things, playing good defense. I think he's been a big boost to that outfield. And to the top of the lineup, they've moved Leonis down to the middle or lower half of the order. And just let Delino take over at the top, and Delino's been doing a great job.
Yeah, this offense had 40 runs in the last four games. That's impressive. Prince Fielder is hot as anybody in baseball, and we've seen some real hot bats in the American League. In fact, in the American League West, Nelson Cruz, primarily comes to mind, but right now I don't know if there's anybody swinging it quite like Prince Fielder. And you've seen some guys get on some streaks before. There is something about Prince, though. I mean, when he's locked in like he is right now, boy, he's a special one to watch.
Well, he did a great job early in the season of going the other way, not trying to reload his power too quickly after last year's surgery. Didn't try to go too fast out of the box, and I think that really helped him. Got his batting average way up there, had a lot of success just hitting the ball the other way, and I think that just allowed him to slowly get back into the groove rather than just trying to rush it back. And I think you're seeing the result of that. I think you've just seen a guy who's really comfortable, really confident, over his injury problems, being patient at the plate, and just letting the power come naturally rather than trying to, be the big power-hitting guy right from the beginning.
Yeah, what a difference this team has made in recent weeks. They look a whole lot different than they did at the beginning of the year. And, both in terms of the way they've played, but now with the makeup on the field, Josh Hamilton activated in Cleveland and now with the ball club, how much of an impact do you see him making early on here?
Not much early on. I think it's going to take him a while to get back into the groove. I think he's got a lot of work ahead of him. He's only had 13 games on rehab assignment, had no spring training, coming off a couple of tough years in Anaheim. And, Dave, I really think he it's what we talked about with Prince Fielder. I think Josh has to take the same route. I think he just needs to be patient, go the other way, take the singles, don't try to be the big power hitter right away. Just take what they give you, go use the whole field, and the power will come. I think Prince offered a great blueprint for what Josh should do coming back from this injury.
You probably haven't had a whole lot of opportunity to spend time with him as he's just recently rejoined the team, but anything standing out? Anything? Just comments, the way he's carrying himself, just his general demeanor. Noticing anything different about Josh Hamilton, or is this the same guy?
I think the big thing Josh has to do is stop talking about the Anaheim Angels. I think he's got to get that out of his system. I mean, that's not doing anybody any good. Not doing the Rangers good. Not doing the Angels good. Not doing him any good. The Angels gave him a big contract. He didn't play well for 2 years. He had some personal issues that the Angels didn't like. They decided to trade him. They traded him to the Rangers. That's where he wants to be. He's happy to be here. I think the big thing right now is Josh Hamilton needs to stop talking about the Anaheim Angels.
Yeah, interesting. The Rangers, have they entertained it all? Johnny Nairn's name comes up. He was the guy, the accountability coach, whatever, companion in years past. That relationship seemed to work out well. Have they entertained or discussed it all, any provisions like that for him this time around?
Well, Shane Kelly is another guy that Josh has relied on in the past. He's with Josh now. I think Johnny Nairn is, kind of getting on with his own baseball career. I think Shane will be there with Josh Hamilton. They have a gentleman by the name of Roy Silver in the organization. He was instrumental with Josh early in his recovery. I think they have those two guys there. He has his teammates. He has, a lot of other things going for him. I think from that standpoint, this should work out. If it doesn't, I don't know if anybody's going to be able to take the blame but Josh. But, from all intents and purposes, it seems that Josh is determined to, do the right thing again.
Yeah. What kind of response do you think he's going to get on Thursday when the team comes back home?
Great one. I think he'll get a great one.
Yeah.
I think people are going to remember the great times. I think they're going to remember who he was. I don't see any negative there. There might be a few negatives, but I think it'll be overwhelmingly positive. Knowing the Ranger fans, knowing how they forgive players in the past. A lot of these guys have come back. Juan Gonzalez has come back. Ruben Sear has come back. I think it'll be an overwhelming positive response for Josh.
Yeah. Sometimes when you somebody of his profile and situation, if they rejoin a team, you can see where there would be the potential for it to be a distraction to a team. Had the team maybe not turned things around as dramatically as they had recently, that might have even been a possibility. But now it seems to be kind of the opposite. To me, it seems as if he's just sort of this, piling on addition to this momentum that they've got going all of a sudden, and he's just another reason for everybody to be
raw, raw and excited, and not a distraction at all. In fact, he's able to kind of just kind of sneak in the side here while the team's getting all the attention for, you know, playing so much better. Am I reading too much into it, or am I – I have some sense for maybe how this is playing out.
Well, I think one thing is the Rangers have a lot of type B players as far as personnel. You look at Prince Fielder, he's very laid back. Adrian Beltre, Elvis Andrus the same way, Mitch Moreland. There's four key guys there. I mean, you know, there's not a lot of guys who are going to get upset, agitated, or distracted by a lot of things. They just don't do that. It's just kind of the way, kind of the players that the Rangers have on their team right now. So, you know, it was like last year when people asked, what happened, Ron Washington, a distraction? And I said, you know, there are a lot of guys who need to be worried about themselves. You know, they don't need to be worried about Josh Hamilton, or they don't need to be worried about Ron Washington. They don't need to be worried about, you know, Rob Manfred or anything else, pace of play or anything like that. They just need to be worried about what they're supposed to be doing. That's playing good baseball. And for the majority of the Rangers, that's what they need to be doing. And for the leaders, you know, Beltre, Andrus, Moreland, Prince Fielder, they're so laid back that they're not going to let this thing be a distraction.
Feliz, did this come as any kind of surprise? And how long do you expect he'd be out?
Who's that?
Neftali Feliz.
Oh, Neftali Feliz, yeah. I mean, yeah, that came as a surprise. I don't think he'll be out too long. We knew he hadn't pitched in a few days, but there were no arm injuries. There were no sign of arm injuries. So, yeah, I think this is just something that cropped up out of a sudden. And, no, I did not expect him to be out a long time.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, it has been something fun to watch his Rangers play baseball recently, TR, and very interesting to get back into this race. Look forward to talking more ball with you again next week.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
I feel like each of the last several weeks, we've wrapped up our conversations with a promise, perhaps, at least at the very least, a hope that the following week we'll have a slightly more positive tone. And I think we're at long last there, Jane. There are actual positives to discuss with regard to the Oakland A's after this last week. And, in fact, they're on a little three-game winning streak at the moment.
They are their first three-game winning streak of the season, which is hard to believe. But there's been a lot of positives. Just starting with the pitching. I mean, I think coming into the season, everyone knew that the starting staff was going to be good, and they really have been all season. You've just seen all these bullpen hiccups that have been really hurting them, and there haven't been as much of late, and I think, starters are going deep in the game. Yesterday we saw Jesse Hahn pitch his first shutout of his career. Just things like that, it's first of all awesome for him, but it's just such a boost for the team. I mean, it was a day when the defense made three more errors. We really haven't seen the errors go away, but, on a day when they make errors and they don't come back to bite them, I mean, I think that just kind of builds their confidence and makes them realize, even if I make an error, I have a teammate who can pick me up, and vice versa. And I think, when they can start believing in themselves like that, that goes a long way. And you hope that along the way, the defense does shore up. And I think they're hoping that with Ron Washington on hand to lend a little help, it can only improve.
No question. So Hahn, pitches the shutout, which was, like you say, a lift for the whole team. Takes a little pressure off that bullpen for a night, which is also a real lift. But Kendall Graveman came back from the minor leagues, and in his first start back, and he looked really good as well. And maybe a little bit like the Kendall Graveman we saw in spring training.
He really did. I mean, this was the type of performance we saw from him was exactly what was expected of him going into the season. And this is a young kid who a year ago was still pitching in single A. So for him to start the season in the big leagues, not having had the experience with any type of failure at this level, I think it was hard for him to adjust. He didn't have much confidence. So when any one thing, went against him, it was really tough for him to make those in-game adjustments. And I think him starting off with a few good innings, you could see the confidence build from there. And I think with any young kid, that's the biggest thing. And I think, you know, Jesse Hahn can speak for that too. But for them to be getting, you know, the innings out of those guys, and I mean, the stuff's really just, it's remarkable. And Kendall, when he was down in AAA, he made, you know, adjustments. His changeup, he's throwing, at about 80 to complement his fastball, and what a difference that made. Because, you know, the first go around with the A's, there really wasn't, you know, that difference to where, you know, it was, hitters were picking up on it, and he was just pretty ineffective in that regard. But, I mean, you saw everything going right for him, and, also with Jesse, too. He's a guy that had to make a lot of adjustments early in the season, and, you know, you have to remember how young they are, but seeing them adjust as quickly as they have, you can only hope that they get better as the season goes along.
Well, and as big as those two performances were here in recent days, maybe the biggest lift or the biggest news for this team, if it happens today, and I don't know, maybe you can help me out. Maybe it already has happened. But I know that they were prepared to activate Sean Doolittle and get him back in that bullpen. And if there's one outside of the defense, if there's one aspect of this team that could use a little help, well, that bullpen could use it.
It really could. And, Doolittle won't be closing right away. They do want to work him into games in some non-save situations, which, you know, is pretty normal. I mean, this is a guy that hasn't pitched in one game this season, and even in his rehab outings, his velocity was, a little bit down. And that might just be, the environment. I think, when you're in a minor league game and when you're a big league game, sometimes you don't get as amped up. And I think hopefully, the team's hoping that when Doolittle does enter, the velocity does, increase. And I mean, either way, no matter if he's pitching in the sixth inning, no matter if he's pitching in the eighth or ninth, his presence alone really changes the dynamic of the bullpen. And even just having another left-hander, I mean, ever since O'Flaherty went down, Abad's been the only guy they could really turn to for those left-on-left matchups. And now, with Doolittle, pretty much right now available in any role, he could be brought in for those type of situations. And then eventually we'll see, him going back into the ninth inning role. And that way you can, back up Tyler Clifford, put him in the eighth and Scribner in the seventh. And suddenly, if your starter is giving you six innings instead of that seventh inning that the A's have been really dreading, they just haven't been able to find an answer for the seventh all year. Suddenly you're turning to your go-to guys a lot sooner. And hopefully we'll be seeing what we saw most of, last year and years prior is one of, the better, setup and closer duos in the game.
You hate to sort of overdo any particular angle or storyline, but when you look at the starting, Sonny Gray's ERA, a little better than 1.75. You got Kazmir just a smidge over three. Jesse Hahn a little over 3.5. Chavez under three. I mean, you could easily say, look, the starting rotation is more than doing its job. You get that, that one man in the bullpen where you can just tweak some roles a little bit, and suddenly maybe you do get this thing turned around in a real hurry. I mean, you hate to think it could all have spun off of not having Doolittle in that role. It seems a little much to put on that one move. But geez, some of the other pitching's been pretty good. It's just getting everybody back in the right roles might be enough to get this thing going.
Yeah, I mean, it does make a difference. Not one person is not going to turn around the season quickly, but it just changes so many of the dynamics of the team and the way, roles are in place. And roles are important for guys. I think there was so much, you saw it was kind of like they were playing musical chairs in the bullpen because there were so many injuries, a lot of struggles that – Bob Melvin had no choice but to, try to try out different guys in different roles just because nothing was working. And I think this allows him, to hopefully soon enough stick with a formula and, get them get them in a role that they feel comfortable with and maybe get guys, going, because that's all they've been waiting for. That's why this 3-game win streak is so big for them. Just, gaining momentum is something that they just haven't been able to do. And the fact that they're, realizing, hey, we can do this, we can build off, a win and do it again, and just realizing that they're a better team than maybe their record shows. And I think getting a guy like Doolittle back, and they got Ben Zobrist back yesterday, I think it's easy to forget how impactful injuries can be. And, as a fan, you're looking at the product on the field every day. And lately it hasn't been a great product just because of so many injuries. I mean, Brett Laurie's been out. So when you take out guys like Laurie and Zobrist, and Coco from your lineup and Doolittle from your bullpen, I mean, those are significant pieces to this roster. So to have them coming back slowly, getting this team back to what people expected it to be before the season started, I mean, there's still time. It's still early, and luckily for them, there's a lot of parity in the division. It's not like one team's necessarily running away with it. And although they do have, it's a long road to climb back, I mean, they really can't look too far ahead. It sounds so cliche, but for a team like this that still does have expectations of itself, they have to focus on the day and winning that day and go out, the next day and do it again. And suddenly you are looking at a 3-game winning streak, and hopefully, today a 4-game streak. So I think this team has just been in need of a little bit of confidence, and I think when you get key guys back like that, that only adds to it.
Well, no doubt, and being home here for a little stretch will help as well. Yankees maybe scuffling a touch, and they'll have 4 with them at home. So maybe a little silver lining right here on the horizon as we turn the calendar over here very shortly to June. Jane, great stuff. Always enjoy talking a little baseball, and look forward to doing it again next week.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Well, thanks again for joining us. Another action-packed week. And this has been MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition.